Welcome, folks. Welcome to everyone online. I see at least one new name here. Richard, welcome. If you want to open your microphone and let us know who you are, where you're coming from, or just to send in the chat, we'd be happy to know that. And welcome to the folks around the table. Got 10 people here. And another bunch online. I'm sorry, speak up.
I'm in Toronto, Canada.
Toronto. Oh, my yes. Goodness. We hope you have your mittens on. Okay, welcome. Welcome to you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Sure.
You're generous, it's not mine.
Anyway, tough day for the Jewish people. Can't say much more than that. We're at the halfway through Daf Nun Aleph Amud Aleph 51A. You see there's two dots. In the wide lines, exactly halfway, there's two dots. The first word is Itmar. Itmar means it was stated. What was stated?
You know what you're going to test us? You're never going to get it.
It's about halfway here. You see there's two dots here?
Thank you.
What does Itmar mean?
It was said?
Yeah, but what does it mean? Oh. That's what the words mean, but what does the phrase mean? What does the concept mean? Itmar introduces a machloket amorayim. Right? Itmar always introduces a machloket amorayim. I asked you because you're good with those types of things.
So you said last week.
Hidushin she'en misurin lebiya. A potential marriage which cannot be consummated. Bia is a euphemistic term for sexual relations. So a marriage that cannot be consummated, meaning that for legal purposes, for halachic purposes, marital relations between these two people are forbidden. Well, does it count? Like, we know that there's certain, don't get confused with like halacha lamaisa, things that you know. Think in the abstract. You know that there's certain marriages that cannot be contracted. A brother and a sister stand under the chuppah and do everything you're supposed to do. They're not married. And you also know, halacha lamaisa, there are certain forbidden unions where you shouldn't get married, but if you do get married, you're married. What would be the best case of that?
Kohen and Grusha.
Kohen and a divorcee cannot be married, but if they do, they are married. They have to divorce. They're obligated to divorce, but it's forbidden for them to be married, but the marriage is contracted. And when they get divorced, she's a divorcee. A brother and a sister stand under a chuppah and he says, Hariat Mikudeshitli, right? They're not married. You don't have to give a get. She's not a divorcee, right? It was nothing.
She's a double divorcee.
Now she's double divorcee. Okay, fine.
What if the case is not because of physically impossible?
That's not what the Gemara is discussing here. That's a separate sugya for a different time.
The old people?
No, they are.
He was injured in war.
Paralyzed.
The question was, what about a case of a... No, gentlemen, there are ladies present. The question was a marriage which cannot technically, physically be consummated. That's not the question. It's about whether or not halachically marital relations are permitted between these people. So it's a machloket. Abaye amar havu kiddushin. Abaye says if they get married, how can they married? Right? Even though it's forbidden for them to engage in relations.
What's the case where they're allowed to get married but they're not allowed to have relations?
A coin and a
grusha,
right?
Of course.
A mamzer.
Yeah.
Right?
Also, the embarrassed bride or something, and then theoretically, you'd have to be married to her forever, right? Until she dies, and you die.
And what's that got to do with this case?
No, he asked the question. In which case are you forced to be married permanently? Isn't that one of the cases?
Oh. Not in the Torah, no. So Rava says, Abaye Amar have a kedushin, right? They shouldn't get married, but if they do get married, they're married. Rava Amar lo have a kedushin. It's not kedushin, or a better case, as we're about to see, right? You're not allowed to be married to two sisters, but if you do marry the second sister, are you married or are you not married? Well, that's the machloket between Abaye and Rava. Abaye Amar have a kedushin, Rava Amar lo have a kedushin. Rava says if you're married to one sister and you try to marry your sister-in-law, you must really like your in-laws. But Rava says it doesn't work. The kedushin are not tovsin, right? It doesn't cup. So Amar Rava, explains his position that the marriage is not contracted. Bar Ahena Asabrali. I heard the explanation of this, the source for this, from this figure, Bar Ahena. Ki yikach ish isha uvala. It's a posuk in Parashat Kitetse. What's the context? No, it's not war. Kitetse la milchama is war. No, it's Motzei Shemra. It's Motzei Shemra. I mean, it's divorce. It's divorce. As we learn the halachot of marriage from the psukim about divorce. So ki yikach ish isho vala. When a man takes a woman and engages in marital relations with her. So what do we learn from that posuk? Ki yikach ish isha. Kicha, kicha. This was the first sugya in kedushin, right? That we learned that the mechanism by which kedushin is enacted, this act of kicha, of taking, which we do through kesef, shtar, or bia, although universally we do today with kesef or something that's worth money, a ring is the main object. So. What is the context in the Torah? The Torah is you do this almost as if the purpose of which is in order to engage in marital relations. So a relationship in which the marital relations are forbidden, so obviously, Rava says, based on this halacha he hears from Bar Ahena, cannot be kiddushin. So I wanted to pause here and consider this phenomena. Because, you know, we don't, like, we're talking, it gets rather nitty-gritty. But we're talking about, you know, matters of, matters of the heart. Matters of love. There's an interesting phenomena. I sent around on the WhatsApp group, and I'll put it here in the chat as well. Oh, I can't put it in the chat. I sent around on the WhatsApp group a link. David, if you're able to share the link on the chat, I appreciate it. A tradition article by Rabbi Lichtenstein from way back when. He mentions something rather poetic. Something you don't usually find in halakhic literature. The tour, you know, the precursor to the Shulchan Aruch, in his introduction to Hilchot Evin O'Ezer. Evin O'Ezer is the section of the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch that deal with, among other things, marriage, marital sexual relations, also divorce, all those things that we often think of in the Gemara as being connected to Seder Nashim. But the Torah opens with a kind of preamble. And he says the following. I apologize, I don't have it on the screen. So just listen. Interestingly, what's the first simon in Evin O'Ezer about? Now, these questions of the organization of knowledge. You know, how we categorize knowledge. knowledge says a lot about how we think about different things. You know, like, remember when we were kids and we learned how to use the library, and probably back then we learned the Dewey Decimal System. Yeah. In other words, you have all of these books, and they have to be organized somehow on the shelves. And it makes sense. I mean, there are different ways to organize libraries. Historically, there were different ways to organize libraries.
By color.
You could do it by color. Not very useful. Not very useful in terms of finding what you want. You could do it alphabetically by the title of the book. You could do it alphabetically by... You know, in the new National Library. Have you visited the new National Library in Jerusalem? It's well worth visiting, and it's. But if you go on a tour. They have free tours. You can sign up. It's absolutely well worth visiting. So, but they have like these kinds of like it's like a museum piece, the old card catalog. But remember the old card catalogs? There were three of them: author, title, and subject. Because, you know, you didn't know how people were going to be looking for the book. So every book had to have three cards. And one was alphabetized by the name of the author. One was alphabetized by the title of the book. And one was a subject. Those subject categories either were according to Dewey or according to, or they were alphabetical, or they were according to the Library of Congress, which was a different way of organizing things. But that question of how you organize information and where the books would go on the shelf, say something about, it's the same thing with Shas. The Rambam in his Hakdama LePerush HaMishnah, which we once learned together many years ago. I don't think any of you were there. Maybe David was there. The Rambam in his Hakdama LePerush HaMishnah gives a kind of, it's a drasha. He tries to explain the organization of the Masechtot in the Sterim. Now, how are the Masechtot organized in the Sterim? By size. And the Rambam knew that very well. It goes from larger to smaller. Not in terms of the number of Dapim in our Gemaras, but in terms of how big the Masechtot would be if it was just the words of the Talmud.
There was an article about that somewhere.
I'm sure there have been many. But the Rambam, nevertheless, gives a drosha trying to explain like the conceptual progression from Masechta to Masechta. So the same thing with the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch reorganizes all of the information into four major categories. Of course, the Shulchan Aruch is really only focused on halacha l'maaseh. So it leaves out. There's no equivalent of Seder Tahorot or Kodshim in the Shulchan Aruch, and generally speaking, Moed corresponds to Zroyim in Moed. At least the Halacha Lamaisa corresponds to what the Shulchan Aruch?
Orchaim,
right? And Ezekin corresponds to Choshen Mishpah. You understand? So Ebenezer is basically Noshim. But even within that, the organization is quite different. In other words, the Orach Chaim in the Shulchan Aruch doesn't correspond to Masechet Brachot, Shabbos, etc. Right? It works more according to like the way a person goes through life. What's the first thing in Orach Chaim?
Getting up in the morning.
Yitgaber, right? You get up like a lion to the service of God. From the moment you open your eyes, right? So Ebenezer opens with Pru Avu. The first siman in Ebenezer's Pru Avu is the mitzvah to procreate. So the Torah says the following: Yidbarach Shmo Shel Hakadosh Baruch Hu Shehu Chafetz Betov Briotav Sheyada Sheein Tov LaAdam Liot Levado. Blessed is the name of the Holy One. Blessed be He who desired the good of his creatures, and he knew that it is not good for man to be alone. Va'alkein asalo ezer kenegdo, and therefore he created for Adam, the first Adam, a help meet, right? Created Eve. Va'od ki kavanat habri'a ba'adam kedei lifrot l'rabot, and the kavanah, the intent of creation, the purpose of creating humanity was to reproduce the species, to procreate. B'ze yefshar blo ezer. And it takes two to tango. Not an literal translation, but you understand what he means. And therefore he commanded him to cleave. He commands man to Alkein Yazov Ishet Aviv Et Imo. A person leaves his mother and father and he cleaves to his or her spouse. Lokach Chayav Kol Adam Lisa Isha, and therefore each person, each man, obviously there's a kind of gender perspective here, right? Every person, every man is obligated to find a wife, Kedei Lifrot L'Rabot, in order to be fruitful and multiply. Shekol Mi She'eino Osek B'Firi Yerivya, and anyone who does not engage in multiplication, Ki'ilu Shofech Damim, is as if you spilling blood, as if you're a murderer. Tichtiv Shofech Dam Ha'adam V'Samichle V'Atem Pru Urvu. Right, the two commandments, you can't murder, is adjacent to be fruitful and multiply. So from this, the Gemara learns out that if you don't, if you're not fruitful, it's as if you are murdering. Etc., etc. He begins with this kind of poetic introduction. So Rabbi Lichtenstein, in that article, which I sent to you, if you have it on your phones, you're welcome to open it, or you can just listen along, those of you online. It's an article that appeared in Tradition in 2002. In 2005, called Of Marriage, Relationships, and Relations. And after a kind of expression of discomfort about discussing such intimate matters in a public forum, he engages in a rather typically thorough and significant discussion of the Jewish view of marital relations. And the relations of marital relations within marital relations, right? Meaning what, let's speak plainly, we're all adults. What is the Jewish view of sexual relations within marriage? Obviously, the authentic halachic view is there ain't no such thing as sexual relations outside of marriage, right? But what is its role within marriage? And he begins with the idea that it cannot only be procreative. Right? It cannot only be about reproduction. So therefore, what is there? Anyway, I thought it'd be worthwhile to look at this because you know each and every week we discuss these topics in the abstract, and here's a useful perspective. So it's here. It's on page 11 of the article. You printed it out. You have one of those fancy printers that makes a little book. It's pretty good.
I mean, it doesn't. I stapled it myself, but it prints it in the format of a book.
Doesn't staple it?
It doesn't staple it. It doesn't even fold it either.
So how do you staple it like that? You have a saddle staple?
Hmm. Open a stapler and...
Yeah. Okay. So Rabbi Lichtenstein says, whether from a technical halachic standpoint, marriage is necessary for the formal fulfillment of the mitzvah of procreation, peruvu, is possibly a matter of debate. Rush was emphatic in stressing that it was not. In explaining the text of Birkat Erusin, a topic that I mentioned in our very first shiur, right? My Birkat Erusin, you stand under the chuppah. Remember, I asked you, I just mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, this came up again. Like if I asked you what if you had to if I tasked you with writing the bracha that we recite under the chuppah, you'd get all romantic, but that's not what it is at all. These women are forbidden to us; those are permitted to us. It's not at all romantic. So, in explaining the text of Birkat Erusin, the matrimonial blessing, and its convoluted content, Baruch Shekivanti. The Rush states that it does not relate to any particular mitzvah. Right? In other words, the bracha to the chuppah isn't asher kedushanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu lisa isha, to marry a woman. Right? It doesn't reflect any particular mitzvah. Surely not that of procreation. It could have been asher kedushanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu lehitchatein v'lefrot u'lerabot, to marry and to be fruitful and multiply. What was that? There was
married, so it's a rabbinic. Does it come up in the? Does it come up in the fungus? You have Adam. You have Adam. You have Eve. Supposed to get together. You're supposed to have kids. Does it say you have to get married?
I mean, it doesn't use the language of marriage. But the idea of Alkenya Azov Ishet Aviv Vetimov Yudabek Biishto implies that there's a relationship here which is formed. And certainly by the time Chazal come around, it's marriage as we know it. It's Chuppah VeKiddushin.
Wasn't that nice?
Well, the Rambam describes the history. In other words, the Rambam describes before Matan Torah, how would you do it? It was like a caveman. You'd see a pretty girl, you'd grab her in the shuk. No, not at, after Matan Torah, there's Kiddushin. Huh? Anyway, so he says, surely not that a procreation is one would potentially fulfill the commandment to reproduce without marrying. You have children out of wedlock. You shouldn't do that. Oy vavei. But
it does happen.
In 2000, yes, right. But in other words, if you have children out of wedlock, you shouldn't do it. But have you fulfilled Puruvu? Have you been fruitful? Yeah. Well, it happens not to be a mitzvah. Mitzvah Baba Yaveira is a very, very technical construct and would not apply in this case.
Why did
not? Well, listen, so this view is palpably accepted by Rishonim, who held, on the basis of a passage in the Yerushalmi, that the mitzvah could Bidiavad, which Rabbi Lichtenstein explains as in extreme circumstances, be fulfilled through an incestuous union, not just out of wedlock, but even incest, not amenable to matrimony. Right?
So was he saying brother and sister?
An incestuous relationship. Rambam, however, seems to have held otherwise. Rambam disagrees with this. This is perhaps indicated by the inclusion of the mitzvah within Hilchot Ishut. In the Rambam, when the Rambam did his Dewey Decimal System by organizing the Mishneh Torah, which was unlike the organization of the Shas by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, and unlike the later organization by the Torah and Shulchan Aruch, right? The Rambam's organization of these 14 books, Puruvu is in Hilchot Ishut, in the laws of marriage. He could have created a different section called the laws of Puruvu. Right? The Rambam rejects this idea that you can fulfill the obligation to procreate
outside
of marriage. And he places it, he embeds it within the laws of marriage. But is fairly explicit from the heading of this section. The Rambam at the beginning of each section of the Mishneh Torah lists for you which of the 613 mitzvot are being considered here. So what's the heading of Hilchot Ishut? Number one, Lisa Isha b'ketubah v'kiddushin, to marry a woman with a ketubah and with the act of kiddushin. A couple of other mitzvot, and number four, to reproduce with her. Right? In other words, the Rambam limits Puruvu to within the marital relationship. So and yes, even the Rambam might have been aware that some people go off and sow wild oats and bring children into the world in that manner, but they do not fulfill the mitzvah Puruvu in that manner, according to the Rambam, against the other opinions. What is beyond question, however, is the fact that the institution is not the institution of marriage is not designed solely in order to provide a licit channel for the perpetuation of the human or the national race. Meaning, even according to the Rambam, that Puruvu is exclusive to the framework of marriage.
It's not the purpose of marriage.
It's not the only purpose of marriage. And then he goes on to say the importance attached within Judaism to the mitzvah of procreation could hardly be overemphasized. Right? But nevertheless, even that is not the end all and be all of marital relationships. And he discusses the importance of marital intimacy, even in cases where Ruvu is off the table. Right? A woman is pregnant. Right? You can't...
She's over the childbearing age.
Or she's over the childbearing age. Right? He quotes a Gemara that says, you know, not in the language of permitted and forbidden, but in the language of inappropriate. That it's inappropriate for someone to sleep together in a room with a married couple. Right? Remember when your kids were little? Right? And they were constantly, it was like a revolving door, the kids coming in all night long. Right? So not little kids don't know what's what. But I don't know, let's say you're on a camping trip or you're a guest someplace for Shabbat and people have to bunk up together. Well, things being equal, married couples should have privacy. Not only because the privacy is obviously required in order to engage in marital relations, right? Even in a case where the wife, let's say, is menstruant, is in nida, and they can't be having marital relations, nevertheless, it's improper for someone else to be sleeping in the room. Ah, he's not stopping them from doing something that they wouldn't have been able to do anyway. Doesn't matter, right? It's the non-sexual intimacy which is invaded. There's something inherently private and intimate and special about a couple sharing a bedroom, even when they're in separate beds, like used to be on TV. Remember, Lucy and Ricky used to be in separate beds, right? Where did little Ricky come from?
Storm.
One of the enduring mysteries of CBS. So it's like it was like curious, like the sponsors wouldn't want anyone to see, you know, Lucy and Ricky.
And they would each have to be sitting on.
No, you couldn't have it. No, and who were the sponsors? Chesterfield cigarettes. We wouldn't want anyone to not enjoy the virtues of a Chesterfield because they were protesting the priestess of Lucy and Ricky, you know, sitting on the same bed when she was pregnant. Where do you mean?
Chesterfield, stay satisfied. They weren't allowed to use the word pregnant. There was
you couldn't use the word pregnant? Right?
No, good title. So, Lucy as enciente.
So this is the point. This is the point. There's something inherently private and intimate about husband and wife, even, right, even outside of, right, and kal vachomer within the... Anyway, I thought this would be... I sent you the article. You can read the whole thing. He makes reference in the first volume that the Torah Sarav Foundation, when they started putting out the posthumous works of Rabbi Soloveitchik, I don't know, they must put out like 15 volumes. So one of the first volume was called Family Redeemed. I think we have it here someplace. And in there, Rabbi Soloveitchik also has an article about the redemption of the sexual life, which touches on themes that he discusses in Halachic Man and elsewhere. But these two essays, Rabbi Lichtenstein's essay and Rabbi Soloveitchik's much earlier essay, are two pairs that go together. Okay, back to the Gemara. So again, Itmar is a machlokas. Rava says a marriage that cannot be consummated legally ain't no marriage. Abaye says, bidyeved, it is a marriage.
At this point, do we know whether Abaye thinks that also about brother and sister?
No, we haven't yet gotten into any specifics. We're going to examine the cases that we've been examining. Two sisters or a mother and a daughter. Omar Rava. Kiddushin Shein Mesur and Levi Lo Avi Kiddushin. Tznan. So there's a Mishnah. Hamakadesh. This is our Mishnah. Right? The one we learned on the previous staff. Hamakadesh Isha Uvita. Oh, Isha V'achota Ka'achat. You try to simultaneously marry two women, and these are two women that you cannot be married to at the same time. You stand under the chuppah with two sisters, and you say, Hare Aten, Mikudashot Li. And he wants to do Bevat Achat. simultaneously. So what did we say about that case? Doesn't work. So einan mikudashot. Right? So what does that sound like? A proof to who? To Rafa. Right? It sounds like a proof to Rafa. These are two, this is right? You could marry one of them or the other one, but you can't marry both of them. And if you were married to one, it would be forbidden for you to have relations with the other. So therefore, neither of them are married. It sounds like Rav is correct. Vaha, but however, in the case where he says, achat mi'isha uvita, right? He stands under the chuppah with a mother and daughter. I mean, the truth is we do this all the time. The mother of the bride is always there under the chuppah, right? Well, maybe that's why. Maybe she should like stand on the side.
Then we can get the mother.
Well, let's hope. Yes. Ha achat mi isha uvita. If he says I'm marrying one of you, he's not trying to marry both of them at the same time. He says I'm marrying one of you.
That can work for one of them, but not for both.
O mi isha v'achota, or two sisters. Mikudeshet.
Which one?
But you don't know which one.
That's even worse.
Get something like that.
That's even worse.
But it's well, it's worse. You don't know. You don't know who you're married to.
Presumably, the one who takes the ring or whatever.
No. Not necessarily. Right. In other words, if he does it simultaneously, if he hands them both rings simultaneously, or if he hands it to one as an agent for herself and or for the other, right? In other words, he makes her an agent for herself. She is an agent for herself. She's also an agent for the other, right?
Yes.
Well, obviously, this is the Gemara. We have plenty of created this. This is not the most convoluted case in the history of the Talmud.
Okay. We don't have to go there.
What about the ketubah?
Ketubah, in other words, ketubah is something else. You can give a ketubah to as many people as you want. It doesn't make you married. You're not, the ketubah doesn't create the marriage. The ketubah is a rabbinic obligation that comes about once you've been Mekadesh a woman. Right?
Okay.
So ve'amai, why? Kiddushin shein mesur lebia. Wait a second. But in this case, when he says to one of you, is he married to one of them?
Yes.
Yes. Now it's Schrodinger's Kala. We don't know which one. We don't know which one is married. But was Kiddushin created?
Yes.
But it shouldn't have been. Right?
Why?
Because the other one is forbidden, and since he cannot now have relations with either of them,
because he doesn't know.
Because we don't know which is the real wife.
He does.
He doesn't.
No, he doesn't.
Right. Since he cannot have relations with either of them, and he's forbidden to both of them, you know, sexually, so therefore that sounds like a proof to who? Tabaye. V'amai kedushin she'ein mesurin lebia ninhu tiyufta derava. Right.
Why is it proof to it's a question on Rava.
It's a question on Rava. This is an attack on Rava, because Rava says he shouldn't be. Rava should say, the Gemara is presuming, Rava should say, since this act of saying I'm married to one of you, I don't know which one, means he's forbidden to both of them. And Rava says a marriage which means you're forbidden to have relations with the woman or either woman is not marriage. So therefore, according to Rava, what should this case be? It should be nothing. Right, she's off the hook with both of them. It's not even a suffix. Right, so that seems like a tiufta, like a refutation to Rava. So Amar Lacha Rava, no. So Rava says, "L'ta'amich," right? I will throw the question back on you according to your rationale. Right, Ema Seifa. The end of the Mishnah. What did the end of the Mishnah say? The end of the Mishnah was this crazier case of the five people and the basket of figs, right? The five women and the basket of figs. It's like a Grimm's fairy tale, right? Goldilocks and the Three Bears, Little Red Riding Hood, the five women and the basket of figs. Ma'ase b'chamesh nashim, five women, uvehem shtei achayot, among these five women is a pair of sisters. V'liket echad kalkala shel te'inim. He goes and he collects a basket of figs. V'shelahen haita. And the figs belonged to the women. Ah, except what? Shel shvit haita. It was shmita. So the figs, which were from the orchard of the women, were hefker. So he was able to make them his own. By the Gemara will ask this question maybe in the Kaddish with Shvias. The Amar Hare Kulchen Mikudashot Kalkalazu. You are all of you together married to me with this basket of figs. The Amru Chachamim Ein Achayot Mikudashot. Since the two sisters amongst the five cannot become married to him simultaneously, no. The two sisters are sit on the side, but the other three, Amru Chachamim Ein Achayot Mikudashot. Achayot who de einan mikudashot. It's the sisters that aren't married. Ha nochriot. Nochriot here doesn't mean non-Jews. It means the not related ones. The ones who aren't sisters. They are married. It does work.
Okay. But then we just learned that if he says something that isn't true, you know that you know it's become betrothed or whatever, then it doesn't work. So he's saying something here that it's not true.
It's not true for those two women.
But he's saying something that's not true. Doesn't matter if it's just for those or just for everybody. He's still saying something that's not true.
You remember when we were kids, there was the Reverend Sung Young Moon?
Oh, yeah.
You remember that? Yeah. He was this cult leader. Where was he? South Korea?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Moonies.
And the Moonies. And they used to have these, like in Madison Square Garden, they'd have these mass weddings. He would make the shidduchim. Right? You'd show up that day, you didn't know who you were marrying. And he'd take a number and he'd hook you up with somebody else. And they all stood on these little platforms and he stood there and he conducted this mass wedding for 100 couples, whatever it was. I don't know the halachos of Moonism, but presumably even the Moonies, you're not allowed to marry your sister. Right? Mistama, let's say. So you showed up that day and you were assigned a bride. They said, you go stand on platform number 17 and you go stand on platform number 22. And then the girls showed up and they stood next to you. So there's 100 couples getting married and the Reverend Sun Yamun says, whatever he says.
And the stats were no worse on divorce and successful marriages than the regular American population.
But on platform number 17 was a brother and sister. Were they married? I mean, not according to the laws of the state of New York. They certainly weren't. Right? Why? Because kiddushin could not be chalin on them. But did that affect the other 99 couples? They were married.
No, but that's a little different. You have the case of the witnesses, where, as we've discussed, if there's a test, if there's eders with seven people and one turns out to be puzzled, that ruins the whole procedure.
But that's a special halacha regarding
eders. That's a halacha eders, right? Here, but in that case of the puzzle eders. The potential chatan and kala, they were kosher zelaze. Had their edim been kosher, these two could have been married. If you have kosher edim, but the chatan and kala are brother and sister, all the kosher edim in the world can't create kiddushin.
Okay.
Right? So here, the two that are out of the game, these two sisters, they cancel each other out. They are not, they are excluded, but the other three, the kiddushin does work for them. So hechidami, what's the case? This is the bottom line. Ilema, if you want to say the amar kulchem, he said, you are all married to me. So it's like the case of, oh no, I'm sorry, kulchen kani, right?
No.
So, kulchem, all of you are married to me. It is like the case of kni at v'chamor. It's a different case. Where is this case in the Gemara? It's a Gemara in Bava Basra.
It's a Gimel.
Uf mem gimel omer aleph. Kni at v'chamor. That asterisk is in the wrong place. It should be before the word kni. Advachamar lo kana. If I say to you, I want to transfer property to something, right? I'm trying to be makne something to you. But if I say to you, bikone this, acquire this, you and your donkey. Can a donkey acquire property?
No.
Although nowadays, who knows? You know about this case with the donkey and the gorilla and the copyright? You know, copyright is very much in the news these days because Mickey Mouse went into the public domain.
The original, Steve O'Willy, anyway.
The original. So you know, among the things that can be copyrighted, there's actually a very interesting book review of a book on this topic in this week's New Yorker. So when copyright came into existence, copyright law predated certain technologies, and as new technologies developed, the law had to catch up. It wasn't obvious that a photograph was a copyrightable thing, but it is. Even though a photograph is not, you see, I have my camera here, right? So if I kind of, go like this and I press a button, I just made a photograph. It's not a very good one.
You didn't copyright
it. There's Charles looking a little perplexed.
Nobody else can actually use that without your permission.
But it's copyright. And if you try to publish this without my permission, without paying my fee, I can sue you.
Right.
Right? It's crazy. Because all I did was hold it behind my head and put my finger on the screen. But it's copyright. Right? It's not a work of art. So there was a thing that that somebody dropped their phone into the monkey cage by accident. And a gorilla picked it up. And took pictures.
And the
gorilla was very, it saw its own image, and they were actually interesting pictures. Who owns the copyright?
Gorilla.
So there was an argument This went. I don't know if it went to the Supreme Court, but it went up to a very high appeals court. Google this: the gorilla photograph copyright case. David, if you're there, you can. And it went very high. The idea that because the nafkamina was fit. No, the idea that copyright could be assigned to a sentient non-human being, and the implications, the ramifications of this would have been extreme. Because recognizing legal rights to a non-human being, this whole animalism trend of which will lead, if not in our lifetimes, then soon thereafter, people will look at carnivores the way we today look at the slave trade. Right? That's the way it's going. We can still enjoy a steak. So right now, people who die and leave their estate to their cat or their dog, they're not leaving it to the cat or the dog. They're leaving it in a trust to pay for the care and feeding and medical needs of the cat. But the cat doesn't actually own the property is owned by it, by this trust, which obviously has to be executed by someone. Okay. Anyway, so if I say you be kone this, you and the donkey, what have I done?
Nothing.
Because by involving the donkey in the conversation, I'm saying that there's no sale here whatsoever. Lo kana, turn the page 52, 51b. Elalav de Omar Lahu. Achat mikem. So what must have been the case? It must have been a case of... He says, I'm marrying one of you. V'ketane ein achayot mikudashot. What? Why are the sisters not married?
Which one? The other one. It's a suffix.
And therefore, according to Rava, you can't create a marriage where you're not allowed to cohabit with a woman, right? And by creating this marriage of safek, you're not allowed to cohabit with either woman. One of them is your wife, right? It's like, let's make a deal, curtain number one, curtain number two, but you can't go through either, right? Because one is your wife and one is your sister-in-law. And you're not allowed to have relations with your sister-in-law. So therefore, you can't have relations with either of them. So Rava says, it ain't a marriage. Ein acheyot mekudashot l'Rava. L'Rava kasha. So, reisha. L'Rava. Kasha reisha la'abaye. I'm sorry. L'Rava kasha reisha. La'abaye kasha seifa. So the first part of the Mishnah is a problem for Rava. The last part of the Mishnah is a problem for Abaye. So metaretz l'talmei Rava. So each of them explains the problematic half according to his own, to his own point of view. Is it, if it's hot, yeah, I'm hot. Could you pour me some water? Rava mitaretz l'tame, Abaye mitaretz l'tame. Hamakadesh isha uvita, o ishav achota, ke'achat. He tries to simultaneously marry two sisters or a mother and a daughter. Einan mekudashot. Ah, but in the case of achat mi'isha uvita, where he says, I'm marrying one of you, either the mother or the daughter, or mi'isha v'achota, or one of the two sisters, mekudeshet. This is according to Tobiah. The Imamar, but what if he says to these two women, the one which is permitted for me to have relations with is married to me. Eina mikudeshet. Eina mikudeshet. Right? Because prior to the marriage, either of them are, but at the moment that either of them or both of them simultaneously enters the marriage,
none of them are.
Correct. You know, if you landed from Mars and sat in on this conversation, it seems a little strange, right?
Even without the coming from Mars.
And then he repeats this Mishnah. Five women, two sisters amongst them. But in this case, he says, whichever amongst you, right? He goes to these five women, two of sisters, he says, whichever amongst you are, would be permitted to me to have married relations with, titkadeshli. Vamru chachamim, ein achayot mikudashot. The sisters are not included in this because if they're entering into it simultaneously, they cancel each other out as being permitted to him maritally. V'rava mitaretz l'tame, hamakadesh achat mi'isha uvita, o achat mi'isha v'achota, nase kimi shekidesh isha uvita, o isha v'achota, ke'achat. So Rava says, when you do this, it's like trying, you're doing it simultaneously. Ve'enan mekudashot. U'ma'aseh na'ami b'chamesh nashim u'vehen shtei achayot v'liket achat kalkala shal te'inim v'amar harei kulchen v'achat mishtei achayot b'kudashot li b'kalkala zu v'amru chachamim ein achayot b'kudashot.
When Rav is saying is that when you say mekadesh achat me'isha u'bita, it's not, you can't play that game. You cannot say one or the other because
it creates this untenable suffix. Right. Yeah.
You don't have to say either. He says that even one or the other is not acceptable.
Well, what would be the difference between?
Well, first of all, before we say, only if he says them, he says to them both simultaneously. Only at that point would be that unacceptable because then. But if you said one before the other, then you could have a habamina that says he could marry one, and then either one of them could be married to him, that would be acceptable. Right. Here he's saying no.
Right. Here he's saying I'm gay like the one, but he doesn't specify which one.
Right, but he doesn't specify which one, and therefore they're both mikudashot misafik.
Right, he doesn't specify which one.
Right. He specified which one. That's how we all got there. We all stood under the chuppah. Right, I hope we all stood under the chuppah with a girl and her mother. But it was clear we were not marrying the mother, right? Even if the mother was single, right? It was clear one of them was in a white dress, right? The other one looked matronly. So now the Gemara says Toshma. You see, it's like the fifth wide line. Toshma. Hamakadeshet bito stam. Here, Makadesh, here is transitive, intransitive. In other words, Hamakadesh usually means the man puts the ring on the finger and says, I want to marry you. Here, it's Makadesh. He is marrying off his daughter. Right? You know, like you could say, I married my wife. I can also say that I married my sister.
Yeah.
What do I mean? I was Masada Kedushin at my sister's wedding.
South Africans always say this, rabbi married us. You know?
Right, the Americans say it also, right? Like you also say, that was the rabbi who bar mitzvahed me, right? As if like there was some...
It could be a verb, though.
Right, right. I married my sister, meaning I performed the marriage ceremony at my sister's wedding.
If somebody here to say that, I would think that there's something wrong with it.
I guess... In the words of the president of the University of Pennsylvania, it all depends on context. Hamakadesh et bito stam. And he marries off his daughter stam. He doesn't say which daughter.
He has a number of daughters.
He's Tevya. He's got five daughters. Right? And he sees a nice guy and he says, Hare biti mikudesh et lacha. Right? Or no, it would be the other way around.
He had two sets. There was a case with two sets of daughters. He's saying the youngest and the oldest.
Who, Tevye? Oh, here.
Yeah,
Beseder. Okay. Tevye actually had seven daughters in the book. The movie, he only, in fact, you saw that Norman Jewison died.
Yeah.
Norman Jewison was the director of, you know the story about Norman Jewison?
He was not Jewish.
He wasn't Jewish. They hired him to direct. To the studio went through a number of directors before they settled on him. They finally settled on him, and okay, they signed the deal. They're going to make the picture. And as he's leaving, he says, "You didn't give me this movie because you think I'm a Jew, did you? Because I'm a goy. It's my name. His last name was Jewison, but he wasn't Jew.
A Jew and goy means you got them.
Josh Postel goes to his father.
Oops. Zero Postel's son.
Norman Jewison called. He wants me to play Herod in Jesus Christ Superstar. What do you think I should tell him? Zero answered. Tell him to call Topol's son.
Right.
So Amakadeshet Bito Stam. Ein Habogrot Bechlau. As he's got a bunch of daughters, older daughters and younger daughters. A man cannot marry off his adult daughter. So here, which daughter? And he meets a guy in the street, right? He accepts kiddushin on behalf of a daughter, right? Without specifying which one. So first of all, the bogrot ein amala daber, right? There's no havamina that they're married to this fellow because the father is not authorized to marry them off. The question is, which of the ketanot is now married? Or do we assume that this is a parallel case to somebody who's now married, besafek, one of them is his wife? Let's say there are three minor daughters. One of them is his wife. But since we don't know which one, he's forbidden to all of them. And therefore, according to Rava, what would be the case? He's not married to any of them. So, Makadesh bito stam ein habogot bechlal, haketanot bechlal. But the minor daughters are within this conversation. V'amai, why? Kiddushin shein misur in the bia. This, for Rava, this should be a case of there's no kiddushin at all. V'tziyufta de Rava. And it's a refutation of, the existence of this case is a refutation of the Rava. So Omar lecha Rava, so Rava says, hocha b'amai eskidin. What are we talking about here? Kishe ein sham ela gdola Miktana. He only has two daughters. Right? Which means, for the purposes of marrying off a daughter, how many daughters does he have?
Only
he only has one daughter. So therefore, if he does it stam, it's obvious which one is married. Saha, what's the question? Because the Mishnah says, Bogrot Einan Bechlal. The Mishnah talks about the case that there are Bogrot here. Right? Bogrot Ketani. My Bogrot. Bogrot the Alma. It's like talking like in general. Right? It's talking in general language. Right? It could be a Bogeret. It could be one Bogeret. It could be one. Right?
It could even be more than one Bogeret. It wouldn't make a difference as long as there was only one Ketana.
The problem is that they made it very clear. We're talking about
one and one.
The question is, how can it be one
or more? So, Ihachi, Maila Meimar. So, Hakaba Maya Skinan. And as Bogrot, what's the case with the Bogrot are involved? Right? Hakaba Maya Skinan. Dishavite Shaliach. When can a father marry off a Bogeret?
When she made him
a Shaliach. Now, a woman can make a Shaliach to accept Kedushin. In the case that we always talk about, there's Leah wants to marry Reuven. So she says to Shimon, go over to Reuven's town, and he's going to give you the kiss of Kedushin, and that will create the marriage. But maybe she's already an older girl, and she's happy, Tavlamet of Tandu, she just wants to get married. She says, Abba, I always imagine this is how it would be with my own daughters.
You're pushing.
What? That one day I would come home, and I would say, honey, sweetie, this is your husband.
You're asking for trouble.
You're intelligent.
I had delusions. We're very happy with the chatan she brought home on her own. So it was Mishuchar from Miluim on Friday. We're very happy about Baruch Hashem. So she makes him a sister, father, your shaliach, whoever you, Tati.
You're still human.
Right? Whoever you choose is good enough for me. No. Right? So he's shaliach. So there is a case where a bogeret can make the kedushin. The shavei is shaliach. So mahu that's the case. The Gemara says this would be a case of a bogeret who made her father a shaliach. Mahu detema ki mekabel kedushay adata dida. So there could be a case of a bogeret and a ketana. Okay, anyway, we have to stop here, but this is where we'll pick up.
The idea of being a departure, there is a reality that a bogeret could be married as well.
Yep. Okay. All right, folks online, we'll see you next week. Yeah, wait, nobody leave because they've been a problem with the 9:30 Mariv. So we need you even if you.